Our phone lines are open. 203-333-9422. Melissa in the Morning is back on WICC 600 AM and 107.3 FM.
So last week I had this incredible opportunity to go to the Adams House in Shelton. And I had heard of the Adams House actually right before the pandemic. And I thought to myself, I really want to have these guys on because what they're doing, I think, is different than any other place in Connecticut. And so I went there last week and I was floored. And of course, immediately I thought, work, I have to have these guys on the air. I have to share with you what they're doing for so many families across our listening area. And they obliged. And I was very happy about that. So joining me this morning, both Allison Wysota, who is the founder and executive director of the Adams House, and also Sarah Domina, who is the director of corporate relations and community outreach. Good morning, ladies.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm so glad you're both here. So, Allison, when did the Adams House open, and what was sort of the driving force to begin this?
Sure. So Adam is my husband. Sadly, he had a heart attack in 2012, and I have three boys. And at the time, they were 18, 15, and 11.
Wow.
And looking for services for them following that loss was really difficult. Therapy was an option and really the only option. But what my boys really expressed was the desire to be with other children who were coping through with the loss like they were. And, you know, I'm an education background, and I did look at the other services and I thought we could do this a heck of a lot better. And so as a family, we decided to take this on and, you know, create this space where it sends the message that these kids aren't sick. They just need support and love and kindness and empathy as they go through this journey.
And what I learned very quickly speaking with you, Allison, which is what I think makes your program different than others that I've heard about across the state, is that you have like this fixed timeline,
right,
first of all. So we're not talking about people getting help for 2, 3, 4, 5 years, like keeping them
right
in the system. You have a fixed timeline. And the other thing is that your focus is really on helping children and adults cope with grief. You're not trying to eliminate the grief or live in it, but how do we use this and move forward from it? Because life is life and bad things are going to happen. And so I love that model. Talk about why you chose to do it that way.
Sure. You know, look, life is crazy. Life in grief is crazier. And so to ask families to make an 8-week commitment is sometimes daunting. To go longer, you know, people drop off. We have a mandatory attendance policy. So we're asking, you know, we take this commitment very seriously. And we're really what we're trying to do is create community. We're trying to eliminate subsequent losses. So if these kids come, they need to know that this environment looks exactly the same week after week. And that if you get connected to Joey in your group, Joey is going to be there for all 8 weeks. So that's just super important for these kids. Some stability, no surprises, and then learn. This is a marathon. You have to figure out that grief changes. It's like an amoeba, but it is always there. So we just kind of give you the skills. We put you on the path to recovery.
So how long has Adams House been around?
So we opened our doors to first program families in 2017.
Okay. And of course, the pandemic, like anything else, interrupted everything. But you guys
didn't interrupt us.
But you guys kept going.
You
stayed open.
Well, you know, I thought we're a center that provides grief services and we can't go belly up, basically, mm-hmm, because of the pandemic. So it was crazy. We had program families in program. They're about to graduate. When we went into quarantine, we actually shifted those onto Zoom and still met with them. And we kind of added like 6 or 7 weeks to that program because it was like we didn't even do program. And then subsequently after that, during the pandemic, it was windows open, masks on. We rotated. It was the luxury of having a big house. You know, we just kept moving. And, you know, we did it without any. We weren't a super spreader. We didn't have any COVID incidences.
Amazing.
Which were great, and families were really great about, you know, stepping out if they didn't feel well, and so it all worked.
Yeah, that's beautiful. So Sarah, I want to come to you because you gave me this incredible tour of the house, and the second I walked in, it didn't feel like what I thought it would. So when I heard that you guys do grief counseling for both adults and children, I thought, honestly, that I was going to be walking into almost more of an office space, or that I was going to be walking into more of like a group setting conference room without feeling so corporate. But that did not exist even in an inch of that building. So could you explain to people what the house is like if they've never seen it before, and also what that 8-week program looks like?
So we are a Victorian house that is located in Shelton. It's just this big, beautiful home. It's just a comfort setting that really makes people feel safe and feel comforted when they walk into the home. So as Allison had said, we really wanted to make sure that the kids don't come in and they feel like they're sick. You know, I've had kids come in and give them tours and they immediately say, you said this is a house, but this isn't really a house. This place is fun. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what it is. They come in. They're talking about a really horrible thing that happened to them, a tragic event in their life. But it's a place that makes them feel like they belong. There's other people that are there that are going through the same exact thing as them. We are peer support, so they're leaning on each other for support. And the people that start the program together end the program together. So it really gives them that opportunity to form that network and form those bonds with each other that really we hope, even though it is only 8 weeks, we hope that as they when they leave Adam's house, that they are going to be able to continue those relationships and lean on each other for support. So the 8-week program, as Allison had mentioned, is all curriculum based because she is a former educator. So it was really important to her that every single week the kids come in and they know exactly what they're doing. They know what to expect. You know, there's absolutely no surprises. They've had enough surprises in their life. So we want to make sure that they know that this is what's going to be happening. This is what you're going to be focusing on. And believe it or not, they really do have a lot of fun. They can't believe that the 8 weeks are over as soon as they are. They want to come back. They can't wait till we're having our next alumni event. So.
And I'd imagine it just is nice to feel like you're not going through this by yourself, especially for kids. Because in those moments, you're not even fully developed to understand, like, why would something like this happen to me? But it didn't happen to other people. You know, so I think just seeing that, oh, I'm not alone in this, that mm-hmm. immediately has to, I would think, provide some comfort.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Absolutely. And these children, for the most part, they are the only ones in their school or they're the only ones in their classroom.
Right.
And so, you know, from where they sit, they are alone in this. So that is, you know, that is the eye-opening experience for them the first day where, you know, they start to meet their group and they're like, hold on, you know, what he said, I feel. And that does kind of, you know, lift their self-esteem. You know, it like neutralizes their feelings of, you know, I'm weird. You know, a lot of them just feel like they're the odd duck.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that eliminates that a little right from the get-go.
So we were just talking during the commercial break, and I felt like, you know what, I'm going to share this with everybody. So I've been through enough nonprofits across Connecticut, and I'm not knocking anybody. I think that we have a lot of incredible groups here across the nation, across the globe. But what I loved about Adam's House was I walked in, and it did not feel like I was going there for therapy or like there was something wrong with either my life, my circumstances, myself, whatever the case may be. And I think it was you, Allison. Did you tell me that somebody once described it, which was perfect, that when you walked in, it was like the house was hugging you,
yeah.
Right?
Yes.
Wasn't that
yeah,
so perfect?
I was like, oh my goodness, I just felt like the house hugged me. Mm-hmm. Oh
it's God, true.
I love that.
Mm-hmm. It's true. And the fact that you service adults at the same time as children.
Sure.
You have like a split level home, essentially. I mean, and I know we're going to have the Adams House on a bunch, so we'll dive more into it. But like you have rooms that are for each age group.
Right.
And then you have just a section for the parents in that same house.
Right.
How did you come up with that model?
So, look, grief affects the whole family. And a lot of times within a family, you grieve really differently. There's a lot of judgment that happens in there. There are a lot of bad feelings. Why isn't he crying? Oh, he didn't love them as much as I did. And, you know, then things kind of start to come undone. Also, when there's a big loss, and look, we service a lot of families that have had parental loss. You know, there's a shift in the paradigm. There's a shift in your role in the family. And so it is the whole family needs to come. You know, very often when I have a family in for an intake, a parent in for an intake, like, they say, I'm only worried about the 12-year-old. And I'm like, well, who else, you know, who else is in your family? Well, there's a 9-year-old, but they're doing great. I said, that's actually the one I'm worried about more, the quiet one, the quiet one who's trying to do all the right things. So our model is the whole family has to come because this affects everyone.
So when you commit to that 8 weeks, mom or dad, whoever is still there, and then all siblings, if you've got a family of six kids,
all
six have to be there.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
That's incredible.
That's important.
Yeah. Do you see, and both of you can comment on this, do you see a huge change from week one to week eight?
You know, it's funny because I used to notice it. Now our volunteers notice it. Physically, our families, you know, come in just, you know, looking broken as they should. This has just been, this is an awful time in their lives. But with that support, with that peer support, with the grief education to understand what's happening in their grief, you know, we're not great in grief. We don't do negative feelings well or sad feelings well.
Yeah, of course.
But then to hear what they're feeling is normal and, you know, their brain doing grief, that's a normal grief brain. You see them at 8 weeks, kids and the parents, you know, putting their shoulders back a little further, you know, don't look so, you know, slumped down. They feel a little more empowered. And, you know, that is, I think, one of the beauties of Adam's House is they come in as victims, but they leave as victors. Mm-hmm. And they almost look at us like, well, if they believe we can do it, I think I can do this. Mm-hmm. And so it is very empowering. Our volunteers that go through program, it's like a little adrenaline rush. You know, they love what our program families look like at graduation. Mm-hmm.
That's amazing. Yeah. And Sarah, tell us so it's an 8 week block. So is it like 8 weeks as soon as you get to eight, you know, the eighth week, do you start all over the next week for the next 8 weeks? And if so, like how many people would you say on average per year you guys are serving?
So we like to give ourselves a little bit of a break.
Yes, please.
It depends. I mean, honestly, sometimes they overlap. Last year, actually, the winter program ended right at the beginning of April. And then the next week we started our spring program.
Okay.
We like to give a little bit of a leeway in between because things get to be a little bit crazy. Give our volunteers a little bit of a break. But sometimes that does happen. So we have our goal is to have four programs per year for the 8 weeks. So winter, spring, summer, fall is really what we hope to do. And we have also had our holiday hurdles, which has been a really good supplement to our program. So it's just kind of been a one-night workshop before Christmas and right before Thanksgiving, actually, where the alumni families come in, people that are on our program wait list come in, and they just really do the work and do some activities and talk about how to get through the holidays there.
That's great. So about, did I hear you guys right? Is it about 60 families you serve a year, would you say, give or take? Or
65 families are on our wait list for
programming.
Wow. Yeah.
It really kind of depends. So our current program, which is going to be starting on Wednesday night with the families, we have 16 kids and 17 adults. So we have 13 families.
Wow.
So it really kind of depends. It really depends on how many kids.
I was going to say family size.
Exactly.
Family
size. Yeah.
That
so
makes
if
sense.
You have just, you know, like a mom and one child, then our families will be a little
our
bit.
Parent group will
be a little bit bigger. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's really kind of hard to say typically how many, but we like have at least four people
in each group.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think that's amazing. And the biggest thing here, I mean, the big factor here that blew me away after the whole tour and talking to both of you was that this is entirely free.
No cost.
We work really hard.
I mean, that's unbelievable.
That
mm-hmm. I admire it. It's incredible, but like, and I hate to be that like Scrooge because I know I'm going to sound like that. But how do you do that? How do you not charge anything?
We really can't charge anything. Like I mentioned, these are widows and widowers. So more than likely, they've lost half their income. And so it's really important for me, being a widow, I know that hurt, that they shouldn't have to decide between food on the table and grief support. So it is free. Sarah and I and our board and our volunteers work really hard at our events that they do well so that we can fund it, you know. We corporate sponsorships are going to be super important going forward, and I think that's going to help its longevity. It's going to have to. But yeah, our Dancing with the Stars is super fun, and that's every October, and that's a big one. And then the Great Give coming up in May, that'll be another big fundraiser for us.
So give me an idea, Sarah, because I think the big thing here is that what I love about always supporting local is that you know exactly where your money's going. Mm-hmm. So if somebody were to listen to this today and say, wow, I didn't realize what's happening in Little Shelton, Connecticut, mm-hmm. but doing such a huge impact, give me an idea. If I wanted to support one family for that 8 weeks, on average, what does that cost?
So it costs approximately $1,000 to put one person through a program.
Wow.
So we have 33 people going through our winter program starting Wednesday. So it's going to cost about $33,000 for us to put one person or one for that to put those people through a program.
Wow. So if people, you know, got together, even if you were in office space and you decided, you know what, we're going to all collectively put $100 in, got 10 people who work in an office mm-hmm. space, you're going to fund one person going to this incredible life-changing. And really, I say life-changing because this is really helping them move not only forward, but again, handling grief in a proper way, in a healthy way, which is just amazing. Who wouldn't want to support something like that, especially when life is so unpredictable mm-hmm. and we just yes. never know when we'll be in that position. So how can people donate? How do they learn more? How do they contact you?
So they can always go to our website, which is www.adamshousect.org. They can give us a call, 203-513-2808. They can follow us on social. We're Adams House CT on social. And we always encourage people to come for a tour. You know, like, we can talk about this. You've been there. You explained exactly how you felt before you came in. And once you walked in, what you felt like. Yeah. It truly is life-changing. And I say that from the bottom of my heart when I say we change lives. Mm-hmm. We truly do. People come in there, they're at their complete rock bottom. We have a testimonial on our website from one of our board members who was a program family originally, and she had lost her husband, and she said that she was at rock bottom, like she didn't want to live any longer. Mm. And just to see that transformation with her and her family, and then she ended up being an amazing board member and supporting us there. So, I mean, we truly are transforming lives and taking people from just the sorrow and the absolute most tragic thing that they could experience in a young life, and just really transforming their lives and really helping them to see the hope and the support that they can get from each other and know that they're not alone. And, you know, grief is something that is we all have to deal with, unfortunately, but it's not something that defines you, and there really is, you really can move on from it.
Yeah, that's such a beautiful testament, and I so appreciate the work that you both do at the Adams House. And one more time, if you don't mind, with the website for people to just learn more and to donate online as well.
www.adamshousect.org.
I appreciate you both, Allison and Sarah. Thank you so much. I know we'll be having you on the air a bunch more. I look forward to it and us working together. And thank you for what you do. Seriously, it's changing lives.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
Thanks for having us.
The latest from the state capitol about your own neighborhood. Senator James Maroney stops by Melissa in the Morning now on WICC 600 AM and 107.3 FM.
Welcome back, State Senator James Maroney, the Deputy Majority Leader, and also representing Milford, Orange, West Haven, and Woodbridge here on WICC. Glad to have you back.
Hi, Melissa. Thank you so much for having me back.
Yes, of course. Now, my understanding from your team, Senator Maroney, is that you recently introduced a new bill on data privacy. What is it?
So there are a few things in the bill, but you know, one of the main pieces is to create a Connecticut age-appropriate design code, so to strengthen the protections for children's data. So there's been a UK age-appropriate design code, California passed one, and we're hoping to pass our version of the bill. In the bill we passed last year, we prevented the sale of children's data up to the age of 16, or doing targeted advertising towards children up to the age of 16. What we're looking to do is to expand that to the age of 18. But there are a few other things we're looking to do in the bill as well, to add some additional protections. One of them is to prevent, like in a platform, so say in Facebook or Instagram, more likely for kids, I guess, but to prevent adults who are not connected from being able to message a child, someone under the age of 18, unless you're friends or you know that you're connected with that person on the platform. We're going to prevent them from connecting with unknown children, really. And then the other thing is we want to require a data protection impact assessment where the company will need to test their product ahead of time and look and see if it causes any harms to children and if it does to mitigate any of those harms. One of the things we've seen, unfortunately, is that for all of the good of social media and connecting us and giving people outlets, there's been a tremendous increase in anxiety. And especially with high school teenage girls, we've seen in studies that Instagram especially has caused them to have harmful body, you know, their own body image. And it's made them feel bad about their own bodies. Facebook internal research, according to an article in Wall Street Journal, said it was 1 in 3. There was a study in the UK where over half of the high school girls who are on Instagram had body image issues after viewing, photos on that platform. So we want to make sure that we're mitigating any potential harms. And then the other thing is to try to eliminate addictive technologies that are put in there. So, for example, not allowing autoplay, so auto replay. So if the child is watching a video, they would have to select to start watching the next video. It wouldn't just automatically go on. And, we've seen with some children, they just end up staying on the platform for a long time, right? So,
yeah, so a couple things. I want to really dive into this. First of all, Senator Maroney, why did you want to take this legislation on? And the reason I say that is because it's hefty. I'm just going to put it bluntly. This is not an easy thing to overcome. I think every state in the U.S. is trying to tackle, especially social media and how much of an effect it has on young people. So what drew you specifically to want to write up legislation on it for this session?
Yeah, thank you, Melissa. It's a great question. And I think it's a logical extension of the work we had done last year when we were able to passed the Connecticut Data Privacy Act, which took, I think I worked on it for 3 years. Senator Duff had been working on it for 4 years. But it seemed logical to go on and strengthen the protections for children. When we passed the bill, actually, we did have some of the strongest protections for children in the country. But since then, the California bill has gone up to the age of 18. But another is just looking at how important it is to protect children online. And the average child, I think, makes 17,000 posts to social media by the time they're the age of 18. The average parent puts 1,200 photos of their child on social media before their child is 13. So there's all of this data out there, and we don't know how it's going to be used and how they're going to be targeted. And unfortunately, the other thing is we've seen a rise in online bullying. I think one study showed that it was over half of children, 59%, had experienced some form of online bullying in the past year. And if you think of it, when we were kids, when you went home, you were safe. And, my friend Greg shared this story with me about how he remembered back in school. And at the end of the day, there was this one kid, a poor kid who had been picked on during the day, but he would run to his mother's car. But Greg thought, as soon as he got in that car and he was with his parents, he was safe. Now the kids, when they go home, they're never safe. Their phones are with them all the time. There's always the potential for them to be a victim to online bullying. So it's something we need to look at in terms of digital literacy and just in general, trying to figure out how to harness the positives and try to mitigate some of the negatives of social media.
So we're chatting this morning with Democratic State Senator James Maroney, who introduced a bill this week on data privacy. And it really looks at, I would think, social media. And the reason I ask that, Senator Maroney, so please correct me if I'm wrong, but when I was looking at national statistics, it says just about 80% of Americans are worried about how companies use their data. Are you specifically looking at just social media platforms, or are you talking any online entity?
Right. It's a good question. Thanks, Melissa. Yes, we're looking at any online to look at the way that they're doing their advertising. There are some federal bills that do separate out social media companies from other companies, but we're just looking at any online presence and making sure that they are not selling the data of children, right? Not sharing the data of children, and then not selling, you know, not putting targeted advertising towards children.
So not to sound like a Debbie Downer, because honestly, I'm a mom myself, and I know it's one of my biggest concerns when the day comes that my son wants to get on social media. And you're right, the climate of bullying has changed drastically, and I think that's a huge reason why suicide rates are up. I think it's a huge reason why we're seeing, you know, besides the pandemic, mental health issues are up as well among young people. Social media does play a huge part in that. My question is, on a federal level, we've even seen where we've had hearings where Facebook or Instagram or TikTok, they've been looked at, and how can you allow for these things to happen? How can you allow for data to be shared this way? How can you allow for young people to be targeted the way that they are so you can make a profit? And essentially nothing has happened. I hate to be like that, but I'm wondering how, even if Connecticut were to pass a law, how social media platforms would even respond. Would they even care that this is a law here in Connecticut? And if they don't care, is there more we could do?
Yeah, and that, I mean, you bring up the inaction on the federal level. I think they've been trying since 2001 to do something in regards to data privacy, and there hasn't been a federal bill, which is really why the states are stepping up and that they have to step up into this space. I do think that the social media companies have responded. Well, I know that, I shouldn't say I do think, I know they responded to the UK age-appropriate design code, and so already they've made some changes that they've brought across the world, not just for the UK, but one of them being the, Meta has shut off and they don't allow non-connected adults to use their platform to contact children, right? And so that was in response to the UK age-appropriate design code. Google, through YouTubers, turned off by default auto replay. And so that's, again, one of the other things, I guess, in the bill we want to do is to make the strongest privacy settings by default for children. But so they've automatically shut off the replay. And there are, I'm trying to think if there are some other responses, but they are responding to the UK age appropriate design code. And, there are some states who have different laws and they do respond to those laws. And if you think of it in Europe, where all the countries are different and they're kind of like states, some of them are as small as states in the U.S. and they are able, the social media companies or the other online companies, to respond to the different laws across the different small countries. So they should be able to respond across states.
Democratic State Senator James Maroney is here. He recently introduced a bill on data privacy, and specifically it really looks at young people who are online and especially on social media platforms. Some of the things that the bill outlines is targeting online advertising and trying to make sure they're protecting children up to the age of 18 instead of 16, preventing adults who are not connected to people's profiles from contacting these young people, and also requiring data assessment. So if they have harmful things happening on their platforms, being able to be told, hey, you need to mitigate those situations, and they have to comply with them. I'm curious, Senator Maroney, are there other states in the country that have legislation similar to this in place already? And if so, how's it going for them?
Yeah, so far, the only state that has passed an age-appropriate design code is California, and it is actually they're in the rulemaking phase. So they have a state agency for data protection, and they are putting forth all of their regulations. And then their regulations will be out in this July, by July, and then the law won't go into effect until next July. So right now, it's really not in effect in any state. It has been passed in California. I'm speaking with some representatives from Minnesota. Minnesota has an age-appropriate design code, but I believe there are a lot of other states as well that have put it forth. I've been speaking with states who are working on putting in effect our, you know, what we had passed last year, the Connecticut Data Protection Act, Data Privacy Act. And so there are a number of states that I've spoken with that are looking to do that as well. But there are, I would say, a half dozen to a dozen states have proposed age-appropriate design codes this year.
So I find that really suspect. And the reason I say that is not because I don't think there's good reason behind it. But from everything you just said to me, Senator Maroney, I don't know why people wouldn't want this to be passed. It's just putting more protections in place, especially if you're somebody who's constantly told, hey, put parental controls on your kids' platforms. And sometimes we remember to do that, sometimes we don't. And sometimes kids get smart and they know how to take those controls off.
Right.
So to me, I think this is a no-brainer. It sounds like, at least from the surface, what you're saying is a no-brainer. I'm wondering why more places haven't passed this. Why, I don't know if there is bipartisan support here in Connecticut, but if so, why haven't we seen this pass? Or is this just a very new revelation, I would say, for states? Like, hey, you know what? We've seen the federal government basically fail to get this passed on a federal level. So now we're going to take it on. Like, is this just very new that we're just starting to take this on? Or is it because we just don't have bipartisan support? And if so, why?
Yeah, no, this actually is a bipartisan issue. You know, I've been working with Representative Carpino, Christy Carpino. Senator Huang, who you'll be speaking with later, is working with us on this, as well as, a lot of other Democratic legislators, Representative Haddad, Representatives McCarthy, Vahey, Representative Leeper, Representative Kite from Fairfield. So we do have a great team of people working on this, and it does seem to be bipartisan in most of the states. I think it's just a few things. It's new because, you know, UK's just went in effect, I believe, last year. California's just passed last year. And then there is a lot of pushback from the companies. I think, you know, they'll say that they would rather have a federal legislation than to have to comply across a patchwork of regulations. So it's just working to make sure we get it right. There is a foundation, the Five Rights Foundation, that has been pushing for these bills, and Baroness Bevan Kidron is who started the Five Rights Foundation. She pushed for the UK age-appropriate design code, and she's actually likely to be visiting Hartford on February 15th to come in and talk. So there are groups now pushing for it, and some of the times that's what you need to make sure that you have advocates. You don't want to be a solution in search of a problem. Here we know there is a problem, and we're trying to solve it, and hopefully we can build up enough advocates to work with us and work with industry to make sure that they can comply with it.
Well, Senator Maroney, I salute you for presenting legislation like this, and I look forward to seeing where it goes with the legislative session. Thank you so much for speaking about it in depth this morning, and I know we'll talk in a couple of weeks.
Thank you so much for having me, Melissa. Have a great day.
Thank you. You too. That's Democratic State Senator James Maroney here on WICC.